Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, welcome again, one and all, to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. As always, I'm your host, Roy Richards. And today, we're going to continue on the subject of midlife relationships, and that's one of the six essential R's of midlife renewal. And as you know, we've dedicated several weekly programs, and I have dedicated several chapters in my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, to relationships, because relationships with others is really at the heart of how we feel about ourselves as individuals. You know, it's very tough to be happy and fulfilled if those around us are sad and unfulfilled, as we all know. Today, we're going to talk about relatives who come back into our lives after an extended absence. And we're talking about people that come back from two directions, both children that come back home, adult children who have been away for a while, and maybe because of finances or whatever, they come back into our lives and want to return home. And we're also talking about aging parents who perhaps are no longer able or financially or mentally able to take care of themselves. And that's obviously a challenge for many of us at middle life. And we have two outstanding guests on the subject of aging parents, and they'll be coming along in a little while. But before I introduce them, I want to talk about some relatives returning from the other direction. We're talking about grown children who are forced by the poor economy and lack of a job or whatever, difficult finances, to move back home. And perhaps they move back home even with their spouse and their small children. I know you wanted to see more of your children and grandchildren, but probably not this way. Let's say you're an empty nester in your early or mid-50s, and you and your spouse are having a great time, just the two of you doing some of those things you'd always wanted to do and never could when you had a family living at home, and your youngest child left for college 4 years ago, and it's really been great. But you just received an urgent call from your older sibling, a 26-year-old daughter, and she says that neither she nor her husband of 5 years can find any work, and the two of them would like to come and live with you, quote, temporarily, along with their two young children of 4 and 2. She also hints they could use some help with living expenses. Now, you love your granddaughter and grandchildren a whole lot, and your son-in-law is a great guy, and he fits right in. You can't really say no, can you? But this is the last thing you were expecting or really want at this point in your life. Obviously, it's not up to me to tell you how to proceed, but assuming that you say yes, here are just a few suggestions that I think will help you to keep your sanity. My first suggestion would be, I'd say, set aside your own private living space, and if possible, set aside a separate private living space for your returning offspring and their family. These private spaces should be considered sacrosanct. You and your spouse have to have some place that you can get away from it all and won't be disturbed. It's great to share common areas like the kitchen and family room, but everyone should have their retreat area where they're left alone when they want to be. A second suggestion, I would make it lovingly clear in advance that the offer of accommodations is not 100% free. If it's possible, if your son or daughter who are returning home and their family have any money, I would collect some modest rent or at least ask them to reimburse you for the extra food that you're providing. And if they're not financially able to do that, certainly your offspring and spouse can help out with the cooking, housekeeping, yard work, car care, errands, whatever they're good at. I would certainly, and I think that would make them feel better themselves. There aren't too many real freeloaders left in the world, so I think they'd be more than happy to help out as much as they could. A third suggestion, I would make it clear that nurturing and disciplining the grandchildren, making them behave, remains primarily your children's responsibility and not you as grandparents. And above all else, I would make it totally clear that you and your spouse are not in built-in babysitters, so don't let your children take advantage by, say, going out every weekend and leaving you with the kids. I know you'll on your own you'll want to spend some time with the kids, but it should be at your convenience and not strictly at theirs. A fourth suggestion for adult children who return home, your returning prodigal son or daughter is no longer a teenager, so don't treat him or her that way. So long as they don't perform any illegal acts at your home, it's really none of your business where your adult children and their, if they have a husband or girlfriend or wife, what they do at 3 a.m. That's really not your affair, and that you shouldn't even be asking about it or concerned about it. A fifth suggestion is, if your offspring and his or her spouse are looking for jobs, I would offer encouragement and wherever you can, help them out by maybe making an introduction to a contact you have in the industry or in the community, but don't nag at them and don't pry into their prospects and don't put pressure on them to accept just about anything, because the worst they have enough pressure on themselves now, and the worst thing they need is a backseat driver as opposed to a positive coach. And the sixth and final suggestion is, I know your grandchildren are totally adorable, but please don't spoil them. And the worst thing you can do is to undercut what your son and daughter and his or her spouse tell when they tell the kids no, to turn around and buy them something that they want but their parents don't want them to have. You certainly don't want to spoil those kids, those grandchildren. You know, if done right, with living with three or four generations can be extremely joyful and reinvigorating, because after all, that's the way farm families in this country live for years, where the aging parents would move in and the children would stay at home for years and help out on the farm, things like that. We're talking about three or four generations living together, and think of your friends who complain that they never get to see their adult children and their grandchildren. And you will have the privilege of observing the small children as they explore the world and grow a little each day, and you'll have the companionship of your adult children who you missed when they went off to college or perhaps were located in a faraway city and never had enough time for you. But the key to effective multi-generational habitation is to seek understanding and agreement in advance, and you should talk it out before your son or daughter moves back home, so that there's a clear understanding and there aren't any surprises and hurt feelings that come up. Because once hurt feelings arise, it's very tough to restore calm and peace in a multi-generational type relationship. And intergenerational relationships are just one of the midlife challenges I talk about in my book, and I would love for you to preview it. That's A Midlife Challenge Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. It's on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. You can preview it there, and it's available even both in print and ebook form. And you can also, of course, preview my book on our own website, www.middleagerenewal.com. And I would urge you to go to our website to obtain a free gift, kind of a mini course on midlife renewal. And now let's move on to our two guests who will talk to us about the nurture and helping out of aging parents. Hey, baby boomers, you now have a new moniker. You're now a member of the sandwich generation. And before you run off to the refrigerator to make yourself one, I'm not talking about food. You have been dubbed that in a new Pew Research Center study that was reported in the March 18th Wall Street Journal. The study found that 48% of adults 40 to 59 provided some financial support to at least one grown child, and 21% of you provided financial support to a parent of age 65 or older. So we definitely are getting sandwiched in between. The main reason, of course, is the recent recession and the still weak recovery, which has caused a lot of job losses and lower weekly earnings, and they took a disproportionate toll on younger adults. And of course, also, retirement portfolios of many older Americans took a severe hit, precisely when many of them needed the money. On today's program, we're going to discuss the subject of care for your aging parents, financial support if they are dependent on someone else. And remember our program last month when we said 95% of Americans die broke, and also emotional support as it becomes increasingly difficult for mom or dad to make those tough decisions on their future. And of course, at some point, it makes it tough even for them to make the simple decisions of daily living. Without doubt, most of us feel morally obligated to help mom and dad out. After all, they nurtured and cared for us for 18 years. But did you know that in 29 states, you may be legally obligated to take care of an aging parent? Our guest today, Diane Keefe, is here to help you navigate the maze of elder parent care. Diane is president of the Mideast Area Agency on Aging Foundation, and she became a professional geriatric care manager and an elder care advocate after years spent caring for her mother who had Alzheimer's disease. And I always like to have an expert on here who's actually been there and done that, rather than somebody who's just talking about theory. And she's also author of the new book, Blueprint for Care, A Practical Guide to Managing Care for Your Loved One. And hello, Diane, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Well, thank you for having me today. I'm really delighted to talk about this topic.
Well, I was shocked to learn that 29 states now have filial laws on the books that dictate who is required to take care of an aging parent. And I know that, you know, the laws are different and not all the states have them, but can you give us a sample of the type of requirements that are out there and maybe some of the strictest laws in some of the states where it really is an important impact?
Well, these laws are not new. They've been on the books since feudal days.
Oh,
and, you know, it's almost 30 states, actually, that have filial law.
Yeah.
And the one that stands out is Pennsylvania, because in 2012, they had a court decision. Many nursing homes, you know, are trying to find the money to pay for care.
Yeah.
And the courts made a decision that any one of the children of the parent could be billed for the nursing home care.
Oh, wow.
And in this case, it ended up being about $93,000.
Wow, because that's, you know, what is the average cost of a nursing home now is like $60,000 to $110,000 or something, depending on where you live.
Right. And, you know, truthfully, when you're little, your parents are required to provide shelter, food, and all the things that are important for you to thrive. And then when parents get to an older age, what filial law says is that you're required to provide for them so that they have enough to live.
Yeah, how does a state like Pennsylvania enforce that law? Say, I'm a son that moved out. Maybe I was disowned by my parents years ago and I moved to California and I haven't had any contact with them in a long time. Maybe I've made a whole lot of money, but how does Pennsylvania find me out in California and make sure that I'm responsible?
Well, I think in some cases, you know, when children have moved out of state, it's more difficult. But
yeah,
if they're in state, they definitely don't have a problem finding you.
And how do they know which, or how do they decide which one to bill? Say there's three children living in Pennsylvania. Who gets socked with a bill? Do they look at your financial records or your tax returns? Or
I have no idea. It's, you know, decided by the courts. It can be assigned through the courts. I don't know if they look to see if that's the case or they just, you know, put it out there because, truthfully, a lot of, especially if they're young children, could not afford a bill like that.
No, that's for certain.
That would be like buying a house, practically.
Yeah, older people like me can't afford a bill like that suddenly.
Right.
Well, if you live in Pennsylvania or any other state with, say, fairly strict filial laws, how do you protect yourself from the law while you're still looking out for mom or dad? Is there any suggestions that you...
Well, here's what I suggest. first of all, have a discussion about how your parents plan to pay for health care.
Yeah, that's important.
Encourage them to get long-term care insurance, because that is the one vehicle we have today to help care for unplanned expenses.
Yeah.
And no one knows how they're going to age.
And yeah, no one wants to think about that either.
That's right. Most people would like to avoid the issue, but putting your head in the sand is not going to take care of it when some major health event occurs. And the largest number of bankruptcies today happen because of health care events.
Yeah, that's. We had a program recently where we said so many people declare bankruptcy within a few months of having to go into a nursing home or a convalescent center or something like that, simply because of the cost.
It is way beyond what most people can afford. And when we were growing up, you know, I'm one of the boomers myself. When we were growing up, no one said we were living longer than ever before and that we had to plan for this extended lifespan.
Yeah.
And so most people are not prepared.
Yeah, it's not only a good idea for the baby boomers themselves, but certainly it's a good idea to talk to your parents about planning for long-term care. It's a subject nobody likes to think about. You know, it's also, you know, can be very expensive, but I can certainly see where that would be a good option to talk about that in advance.
Yes, because there will come a time if they, you know, live long enough when they will need some help.
Yeah.
And that is just the way the aging process works.
Yeah, well, you know, beyond the finances, that's always a very touchy issue, is how should you approach your parents about intervening in their lives? You know, what if your dad or your mom or both of them are stubbornly independent and they say, no way, I'm going to give up driving and I'm not going to move into a retirement home? Should you go behind their back, or how really do you, you know, I know my father a few years ago got to be very erratic. He's passed away since, but his driving got pretty erratic, and it wasn't me. My sister actually somehow went to the state of Iowa, and he got his license taken away. But, you know, that obviously could create a lot of hard feelings. And how do you approach parents with something like that?
Well, I've just put together a driver assessment webinar, actually, to teach people about that. There's a lot of things that you can do, but it's important that you start the discussion early.
Yeah.
Because there will come a time when your parent probably will not be safe on the road.
Yeah.
And you want them to think about it in advance so that they are planning for what they can do to make sure that they can still continue on with their activities of living.
Yeah, that's very true. You range transportation. I know there's elderly transit services and other things that they can consider, and of course, if they move into one of these residential facilities, they usually have transportation services. So it's
That's right, and many communities also have something. The Area Agencies on Aging sponsor OATS, or Older Adult Transportation System.
Oh, right.
Sometimes there's Call a Ride. Many adult day centers also have it, and senior centers may have transportation. Some medical facilities provide transportation if you're coming for a medical appointment.
Yeah, like you say, it's really a holistic process. You need to discuss about all kinds of things with your parents and not just hit them with a driving issue all by itself, for instance.
Exactly, because they still need to live. They still need to get their hair cut, go to the bank, go to the grocery store, all these things. So you need to identify what is it that they need to do.
Yes,
and then find ways of getting that done still, even if they're not able to drive.
Yeah, that would be definitely true. Well, say it's time for mom and dad to move into a nursing home, and they agree, but the cost, like we said, is, you know, $110,000 a year, something like that. And say they don't have long-term insurance, and your mom or dad have limited assets. Now, I know there's a federal regulation that they can't gift away their assets,
yes.
5 years before they go into a nursing home? Is that the
exactly.
Time?
So they can't be gifting away all of their money, and I would advise people against doing that.
Yeah.
because if they end up on Medicaid, you know, they will go back and look and penalize them.
Yes, I see.
So it's important that they not be giving away assets ahead of time. But there are ways to have spousal protection.
I see.
There are also reverse mortgages, so if there's a lot of equity in their home, they can borrow against the equity in their home and still, you know, help pay for things.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Of course, I guess if they're permanent, one or both of them is permanently moving into the nursing home, they wouldn't really need that home anyway.
Well, one of them may.
Yeah, that's, oh, yeah. That's,
however,
that's a good point.
You know, before they get to down to where their assets are zero, they need to go to an elder estate attorney and talk about, you know, their different options. And I would really recommend that you go to an elder estate attorney when you start getting into this later phase of your life.
Yes, that's definitely a good idea. And there are a lot of attorneys out there that specialize in elder estate planning and that type of thing.
That's right. And actually coming up very soon is April 16th, which is National Healthcare Decisions Day. This is a day when many elder estate attorneys and attorneys in general help offer free clinics where you can go in and get a healthcare power of attorney and advance directive filled out for free.
It's interesting. That's the day after tax day.
Yes, and I think they planned it that way on purpose.
Yeah.
But having a healthcare power of attorney in today's world is critical. Anyone over the age of 18 should name someone as their healthcare power of attorney. That means that if they're in an accident and they're unable to speak for themselves, this person is the person that will speak for them.
Yeah, that's interesting the way you say anyone over the age of 18. I never thought about that, but obviously they can have accidents or...
That's right, and the likelihood is actually fairly high. So it's very important. I know I had my children before they ever went off to college, Phil went out.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have one for me. I have named my health care power of attorney so that if anything happens to me, someone's able to speak for me.
Yeah, that's an extremely important when you get into these situations, of, you know, end-of-life situations where you don't know whether you should keep mom or dad on a respirator and all these kind of questions that come up.
Right, and that brings up the advance directive. The advance directive is a document that spells out exactly what they would want or not want in the way of medical care if there's no possibility for recovery.
Yeah, and that's what other legal documents are really important? You've named a couple of them, but what other, as a caregiver, should I have for my aged parent?
Well, as far as legal documents, those are the important ones. Now, I would recommend that everyone either have a will or a trust so that you're able to disperse of your goods and, you know, you're not leaving the burden on your children.
No,
because that causes all kinds of problems.
We discussed that in the prior program. You also get tied up in this probate that can mess things up for years and cost a lot of money.
Exactly. And if you have a trust, a trust is an entity that will keep on operating even if you die or are incapacitated.
Yeah,
so it really is a good vehicle to have.
Yeah. Here's a tough question. I know that we've had a situation years ago with my wife's mother where what's the best way for siblings to share responsibility for parent care? You know, it's... so often that one sibling feels put out because the other ones aren't doing their fair share, maybe financially or time and, you know, attention to the caring of the elderly parent. And I know we did it all wrong. We sat down after my wife's father died. The three children sat down with their spouses, and worst of all, her mother was present, and we got into a big fight over various aspects, which is the last thing you want to do. And
that's
all
right.
And felt very bad afterwards that she had been present, especially. But what's the best way to work that kind of thing out with your siblings so that you don't get into that, so that one doesn't get an overly an unfair share of the burden?
Well, it often falls to the person that the parent felt the most comfortable being with.
Yeah.
And the one that's the closest.
Yeah, that's important to have the parent involved, you know, have some say in the matter as long as they're capable of making those decisions.
Yes. And then on top of that, identify the jobs that need to be done. So,
yeah,
you know, do you need to have someone who will accompany them on doctor visits?
Yeah.
Do you need to have someone who sets up their medication? Do you need to have a visit schedule?
Yeah.
You know, these are the kind of jobs that you need to identify and then find out who's available to do those jobs.
Yeah, that's important. Of course, a lot of it's geography. I lived here in the Des Moines area, and my mother and father were here in the same town, and my sister lives up in Minnesota, so obviously a lot of the doctor visits and things like that fell on me, which I didn't mind at all. They were in a residential care center, so it, you know, it wasn't a lot of work. But
still, it's important that there be someone with the older adult that can advocate for them with a physician, because my experience has been that older adults don't speak up about
yeah.
what's going on with them.
And you're very, I know on your website you had a video that makes a very good point that you should take extensive notes, and you should always have someone accompany the parent with the doctor so that you can ask the questions, you know, like you say, sometimes they may be surprised by a diagnosis or something the doctor says and tune out everything else that's said. So it's really essential to go along with the parent when they have those exams.
Exactly. And the other thing is they may not recognize that there's a problem,
yeah.
whereas, you know, one of their children may recognize that there's a problem.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Because I know as a geriatric care manager, I would go into, you know, a doctor's visit with a client, and many times the doctor would say, well, how are you doing? Well, I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, and they weren't okay. There were a
yeah,
lot of things going
exactly
on.
Yeah, exactly right. I can remember experiences like that where my parents didn't speak up much at all when they were visiting a doctor, even though I knew they had some medical problems they needed to talk about.
Right, and back in that generation, you didn't go to the doctor unless you were on your deathbed.
No, I'm still kind of that way myself.
Yes.
My wife tends to go much more frequently than I do.
Yes.
Well, is in-home care a viable option for stubborn, independent parents, and can you afford it? Is that covered by Medicaid normally if they don't have assets and want to stay in their home, or how does that work?
Well, generally, you have to pay for your own in-home care.
I see.
But it is more affordable than going into a facility.
Although that can be pretty expensive. I know we had a program recently where I was shocked at how much that often costs.
Well, it depends on how much you need.
Yeah.
If you can get by with, you know, a couple hours a day,
yeah,
that's not very expensive.
Yeah,
and many times, there are different grades of, you know, in-home care. There's the companion.
Yeah.
There's a live-in.
Yeah.
There's a certified nursing assistant or a medical technologist or a private duty nurse. So it depends on what the individual needs and what their condition is. Because if they have, you know, if they're going through kidney dialysis or if they're having an ostomy bag and things like that, they need someone with a higher level of medical training.
Yeah, and that I would assume would be awfully expensive.
It would be expensive.
Basis. Probably as much as a nursing home, maybe more. I don't.
It can be if the care needs to be 24/7.
Yeah.
Because I have been with clients that were not capable of being by themselves, and they could not have a live-in who's allowed to sleep during the night. They needed somebody awake and, you know, present for that person 24/7. Well, that means two shifts of aid, and that gets very expensive.
Yeah. Well, you know, that your book, Blueprint for Care, sounds like just the kind of practical book that someone, you know, with an aging parent should consult, because you have all kinds of issues in there, and it's not one of these theoretical books written by so-and-so PhD with all the theory of aging and all that kind of stuff. I know you have practical advice in there for all kinds of things like end-of-life planning, independence through technology. I like that one, you know, the drive or not to drive, choosing a residential facility, all these kind of things.
Yeah.
How did someone get a hold of your book or get a preview of it?
Well, they can go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble online.
Yeah.
And see it, or they can go to my website, which is caringforparentstogether.com.
And do you and have I've that written, in e-book form as well as print?
Yes, it's in the e-book form as well.
Nice.
You know, it's one of those things, though, that's a reference. I offered the e-book, but I have to say, I would think you would want to mark it up and, you know, refer to it over and over as your parent is aging.
Yeah,
because,
I'm not much of an e-book man myself.
Yes. Well, some people are and some people aren't. So I was just offering the options. I wrote this because many people said to me, I just wish there was a guide to tell us how to do it. And as a geriatric care manager, I was caregiving for, you know, about 10 people at once.
Yeah.
So I experienced every kind of situation. And, you know, because of that, I was able to speak from real practical experience.
Yeah.
Not just one experience, but many, many different experiences.
Yeah, that's why you're so valuable as a resource. And I know you also have a webinar coming up, and you also have your own radio program. Tell us about
that. Yes, I have a free 75-minute webinar that talks about what happens during aging, where to go for resources, and who can help you. And I invite listeners to go to my website and sign up for that.
Well,
and then I also, you know, have the driver assessment webinar, and that will help you to go with your parent through an assessment tool that helps them come to the realization, too, of where their fears are, what their feelings are about, you know, not driving any longer, and what they need to do to plan for that time.
Yeah, that's an excellent subject. And I also noticed on your website you offer counseling sessions for caregivers that, if they really need some face-to-face discussion or some
Well, and if they want a more customized, you know, care plan, I can talk to them about their individual situations and where they might go and find resources.
Yeah, that would be, and that's once again at caringforparentstogether.com. Is that your website?
That's correct. And I do have a talk show of my own. Every week I interview people in the field of aging, and it's on blogtalkradio.com/Diane Keefe.
And that's the best way to find it. Go to blogtalkradio.com/.
Yes, or you can go on my website, and I've got a listing of all the programs, who my upcoming guests are, and also links to ones that I've already done.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest way for most people to find it. But,
yes.
But no, I think that your services and what you're offering there in your book and on your webinars and your radio program are so valuable, and something that most of us at middle age tend to ignore, and it's a problem that's going to be increasingly coming forth as more and more baby boomers' parents get older and older and need that special attention. So
it's true. They say that 10,000 baby boomers are turning 65 every day.
Yeah, we're getting there ourselves.
We really are. And you know, right now we've got about 17% of the population who are 65 and older.
Yeah.
But by 2030, we'll have 20% of the population 65 and older.
And that's why your subject is very relevant, and I would highly encourage anyone that has an aging parent to go to that website and check out Diane's book. And thank you so much for joining us here today. I think this has been very informative.
Well, thank you, Roy, and thanks for having me.
Well, our last guest, Diane Keefe, talked about the hard choices we often face when dealing with our aging parents, caregiving for them, and children's financial responsibilities, and difficult senior transitions and end-of-life decisions. Our next guest, Christina Steinorth, will talk about the softer, more gentle subject of making life better for your aging parents so that their latter years are pleasantly memorable ones. And I can speak to the fact that when my mother was in a care center here in a local retirement village. Some of the great, we had some great times together, and I think benefited her as well as me, and it leaves lasting memories now that she's gone. Christina is a licensed psychotherapist in private practice. She's a board-certified diplomate of professional counseling. She has a master's degree in marriage and family therapy and has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and a host of other publications, and she's been on various radio programs as well. And she's author of a most intriguing new book we'll talk about later called Cue Cards for Life, Gentle Reminders for Better Relationships. I could have used a few of those cue cards in some of the past times when I stuck my foot in my mouth. And hello, Christina, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hello, thank you for having me here today.
Well, you mentioned that there's a number of ways to improve lives for your aging parents. Tell us about at least one easy activity that, say, I could do as a middle-aged person with an aging parent that would be fun for the mom or dad and hopefully for us, and maybe we'd bond together and it would improve their cognition.
Well, there's actually a couple. That's a very good question. The first one, and I think the most important one, is something that I discovered when I was doing my master's thesis. My master's thesis was about what do aging parents think want from their adult children.
Yeah.
And what I was surprised to find, it was very simple for us to provide. And what it is they just want to hear from us once or twice a week. Just a phone call. How easy does that get? You know,
and if you live in town, I know with my mother, we got in a habit of every Sunday I'd go down there and they had like an interdenominational service in her care center, and it was a great bonding experience for me. I'd get there a little early and often stay for lunch, have lunch with her. Sometimes my wife, Gloria, would go along, and sometimes it would just be me. But just to see me once a week like that, I'm sure meant a lot to my mother because she always brightened up when I came in the room.
It does mean a lot because, you know, when our parents age and stuff, they've lost a lot of friends, and many people are isolated as time continues. And they never want to lose that bond that they have with us. You know, it's kind of like a lifeline. They want a lifeline to their kids. And if we can brighten their day, it's a very easy thing for us to do, and it's a good bonding experience for both of us.
Yes, it certainly is. And I noticed I saw some other people down there at that care center, and it's such a lonesome life, and they never seem to have any visitors, and they look so forlorn. I remember a couple old ladies sitting there talking with each other, and they said the sad thing, like, we really don't mean much of anything to anybody anymore, or made a comment like that, and it was kind of heart-wrenching to hear that. But
it's true. You know, when I was getting hours toward my license, I spent many, many hours working with the elderly in different care facilities, and it's true. You would be surprised and kind of sad when you realize how many people don't get any visitors ever.
Yeah, it's a there's also some activities you can play with. I know at that care center facility that my mother was in, they had these trivia quizzes that was a lot of fun. Actually, I participated in some of those, like name that tune from hits of the 30s, 40s, and 50s and stuff like that. And, you know, card games and board games and things like that that are a lot of fun. Puzzles always seem to be a big attraction down there also.
You know, it's good, especially when you start to see cognitive issues, when you start to see memory loss.
Yeah.
What you'll often find in memory loss with seniors is that usually it's the short-term memory that goes first.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
That's why trivia games are great because, you know, name that tune, old tunes, because what you want to do is bring back old memories. And when I work with patients in my practice, what I recommend is they could put together a memory book for their mom or dad.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
You know, have pictures of old pets, old homes, friends, and kind of sit with them when you go visit and go through it. It's a great way to stimulate their memory. And, again, it serves as another great bonding experience.
Yeah, great pictures of them themselves, of you and I when we were children. Share that with mom and dad and that kind of thing would be great, too.
They love that, and it's so good for them cognitively. It's one of the best things you can do.
Well, let's say that my mom or dad are still in their home, but they're kind of couch potatoes. My father likes to sit out on the porch and rock all day, and my mother sits on the couch and watches TV. How can I encourage Mom and Dad to exercise and get more social?
Well, this is often part of getting older. You know, the bones get stiff. It's a little bit harder to move.
Our dog's going through that now. He's 13 and he doesn't move very much anymore.
Isn't that funny? I mean, and it happens. You know, I can feel I'm not as agile as I was 15 years ago. It's just part of it. So what you can do is you can kind of open up a conversation, and maybe when you're visiting them, take them, you know, let's go for a walk, Mom and Dad.
Yeah.
Let's just stroll the neighborhood. And kind of talk about, you know, if you could just do this a little bit, you know, every so often during the week, it would be good for your mobility, and it would be also good for your balance.
Yeah.
The other thing that exercise is great for is depression, which is very, very common in the elderly.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know even at my mother in her last days, I'd always take her out on this little balcony where she could sit in the sun, and, you know, just getting outside and fresh air helps liven her. I know that helped her a lot. And when she was up to it, we'd walk around the grounds, and that's a good thing to encourage them to do. I know they even had a little track around there that some of the seniors went on, but not so much the people that were in the care center.
Yeah, that's what we had in the care centers that I worked at. And also, if your parents are in fairly good shape, a lot of gyms now have these programs for seniors, these exercise programs, and I've seen them. I think they're wonderful. They bring out these little folding chairs, and all the seniors sit in a circle, and they'll sit in those chairs, but yet they do exercises with their arms and things.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those kind of things. And they even had some weights and things in this care center, but I don't think too many of the seniors use those.
Yeah, exactly. You know, at the exercise centers and stuff like that, they have the trained staff to help with that. But, you know, the other benefit that comes with that, you know, in addition to improving balance and improving coordination, is that they meet other people, too. And, again, that helps lift their spirits a little bit.
Yeah, swimming pools are great for that, too. I know they had an indoor pool in my mother's building, and she loved to go in there and exercise in the swimming pool.
It helps so much.
Well, let's say that my mom and dad are stubborn, they won't leave their home. Do you have any suggestions? Are there any solutions to make their house safer or more ergonomic so that they can get around better in the home on their own?
I do. Well, next time you go visit them, if say it's for a holiday or you're just doing your weekly visit, a biweekly visit, look around the house. And if you see, like my parents, they tend to have a lot of those little area rugs.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, their feet get cold. I understand. My feet get cold, too. But the thing with the area rugs is, you know, they can just slip out from under your feet.
Yeah, they can be very dangerous for older people.
They are very dangerous, and falls are very dangerous as people get older because, you know, they have more brittle bones. They don't have the balance that they used to. There could be some cognitive issues. So if you see, like, little area rugs that are going to slide, see if you can secure those. Other things you can do is look for uneven flooring surfaces through the house and try to repair those as you go. Another great thing, and it's so simple to do and very inexpensive, is you can go to a hardware store and buy grab bars and install them in their shower, near the toilet, anywhere they may need a little extra help getting up, you know?
Yeah, that's an excellent suggestion I hadn't thought about.
It's a very simple fix, and it can prevent so many falls because, you know, that's what something you really want to be careful for because so many times people will fall, they'll break their hip, and, you know, it takes a long time to heal, and it's just not good to get in that position. So if you can avoid it, try to help them do that.
Yeah, well, we're just about out of time, but I want to tell people about that intriguing new book you've written called Cue Cards for Life, and I was really fascinated in reviewing it. I've never seen a book that was quite like that. You can either read it cover to cover, or you can look at particular sections. Like you have a big section on dealing with aging parents, but also teenage relationships and with your teenagers and love relationships, marriage and family. Tell people a little bit about the book that you've written.
Well, I have cue cards for basically every type of relationship that all of us are going to encounter at some point or another in our lives. And I did design it so you never, ever have to read the book from cover to cover. You can just turn to the section that you need, read the cue cards that you need, and you're good to go. It will give you almost instantaneous relationship improvement.
I really like that concept of, not all this theory, but good, hard, practical advice for, like I said before, I wish I'd had that book for, especially social situations when I felt uncomfortable and didn't know what to say, and maybe at work when I was uncomfortable with some coworkers or something like that. You have sections in for all those type of relationship challenges.
And, for all of it, like you said, and I think that a lot of times when you see self-help books, they get caught up in a lot of theory and a lot of psychobabble.
Yeah.
And who has time to read all that these days?
That's true. You just want the hard facts. That's what I try to do in my book, is stay away from the psychobabble and give some hard advice on midlife renewal. But how does someone obtain your book, and what would be the best way to check into that and preview it or order it?
You can get it from a couple places. You can get it from Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and you can even get it from Walmart.
Oh, that's great. And when you're down there, you can greet your local Walmart greeter, who may be an aging person himself or herself.
Always say hello, because it makes people's day. Smile and be engaging.
Yeah.
It could be like the only niceness they get for the day. So I really encourage people to do that.
Well, you also are a psychotherapist, and I don't know, do you do strictly counseling in person, or do you also do it by phone?
I do my counseling in person because I like to see people face-to-face. I like to observe the body language when we're working together because, it tells you so much about where a person's really, really at.
So if someone wants to meet with you, they'll have to take that troublesome trip to beautiful Santa Barbara, California.
It's an arduous road, but it'll be so worth your while.
Yeah, that's such a great name. And had a soap opera about that town. I don't know if that's still on or not.
It's not on, but if you come, I promise you it won't be a soap opera when you visit.
And what's your website so they can get in contact with you or find out more about your services?
My website is www.ChristinaSteinorth.com.
Well, that's simple enough, and I would highly recommend going to that website and especially previewing that book, because I think that would solve a lot of problems for a lot of people that are faced with various challenges. And I certainly thank you for being on today, and perhaps you can come back some other time. We can talk about some other aspects of relationships, but you were very helpful today talking about aging parents and how, us in the sandwich generation sometimes get trapped between the problems raising our own children and caring for our aging parents.
I would love to come back. Thank you so much for having me on today, Roy.
Thank you, Christina.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.